called quantum LDP phi code. And so this is joint work with Irina Andrianova and Denise Morris. And so first thing, why should you care about spatially coupled LDP phi codes? Well, first answer, actually, you should not care because they are not even actually LDP phi codes. The guys that I'm going actually to show you are not LDP phi codes. But still, they do something. And they do something which is kind of satisfactory for a classical coding theorist. Because for people working classical coding theory, whenever you have an LDP phi code, they will always use the same kind of decoder to decode it, which works extremely well for classical LDP phi code, which is this belief propagation decoder. And as David explained, actually, this is not going to work in the quantum setting. There is a big problem with this. And what I want to show that there might be a way to get around this difficulty and still get something, a family of codes, for which actually belief propagation works. And not only works, actually, it even is very performant, even for reads very close, actually, to the hashing bound. Okay, hashing bound is just actually a lower bound on the quantum capacity, but it's still something. And the family of codes which are known actually to are above this hashing bound are not that many. And right now, what we know actually, there's only, for instance, for the depolarizing channel, you can only go above this hashing bound with a very, very tiny margin. So it's definitely something. And iterative decoding, so the belief propagation decoding, will perform much better for this class of code. So, whoops. I see something, but you see nothing, or maybe. Okay. But before I'm going to explain what's going on with this family of spatially quantum LDPC codes, which are not LDPC codes actually, I'm going to just to recall what basically David said actually the first day. But since I'm still taking example and trying to explain why in the spatially coupled setting it performs well, I'm coming back to this example. And so belief propagation is a suboptimal iterative decoding algorithm, which has been devised for classical LDPC code. And basically what it does, it tries to perform error estimation based on just local decisions. And it uses the tunnel graph of the LDPC code that David gave on Monday. So maybe I'm going to, because I'm going to use actually this picture several times, so maybe it makes sense actually to take more or less the same example as he did. So I have a stabilizer code here with three generators and what I call the tunnel graph. So this in black here, these are just now the qubits are not on the edges as for some of the picture that we saw for the toy code. Now the qubits are on the black vertices here. The generators are on this cross circle here. And what you represent here, you represent, for instance, the first generator by these two edges in blue, which means which stand for an X, just because there is an X and X for the two first qubits, and when Y and Y, and then you don't represent it. And this is the third generator with two Z here and two X, and the other one with this two Z. So I will use this picture, and this is basically the graph which is used actually for decoding this kind of code when you use a belief propagation decoder. And maybe I'm also going to explain this later on, because I'm really definitely need it, actually. Are we going to say something like this later on this? So what this belief propagation decoder does, really what it aims at doing, actually, is not able to do it exactly, but what it aims at doing is able to, he wants to calculate the probability that the error in some qubit is either the identity X, Y, and Z given the measured syndrome. And what it does here is going to make some local computations on the Tanner graph, on each vertex of the Tanner graph, and is going actually to propagate this computation throughout the graph. And at the end, assume that you had computed this quantity, then what you are going to do, you are going to choose for any disposition actually the value of the error which maximizes this probability, which is some kind of natural, okay? And how this is done? So basically, it's done the following way. For first step, basically what you know are the probabilities, the initial probabilities, which are given actually by the error model. So for instance, the depolarizing model, P over 3, for instance, for being equal to X, Y, and Z. Identity equal to Y, the probability is Y minus P. You have this probability at the beginning. And now you want actually this stabilizer is going to send some information to this. Actually, the information is going to send to this is just the probability of being either identity X, Y, and Z, given actually the probability that it knows for these two qubits. And this is easy to calculate and depends actually on the syndrome here that has been measured. So you can compute this quantity here, and then each of these qubits gets several of this information actually coming for all from these generators. And what he does computation and sends it back to another generator, meaning actually what he does, he gathers all this information coming from all the other generators, and basically he tries to update the probability of being equal to Y, X, Y, and Z. And so this is carried on. At what happens, and it's generally what when we explain actually that you do not want the cycles in the Tanner graph, is the following phenomenon which happens. If you don't have cycles, then what is computed at the first step is the exact probability that exactly what you had here, of course, because here there's definitely an exact probability. So given the syndrome, the probability of being equal to Y, and what happens at the information which is sent to here, for instance, is just the probability that the error at this qubit here is equal, let's say, to Y, given actually all the syndrome which are up to depth 2t here in this tree. And so what's going on here, the more iteration you make, actually, the more syndrome you take into account. And if you don't have actually, if you have a tree, then at some point you will take into account all the syndromes. And you calculate this probability exactly. Unfortunately, the codes which are associated to Tanner graphs, which are trees, are not interesting. They don't have actually a growing minimum distance. So you're not going to use them. So you need actually cycles here in the Tanner graph to do something interesting for you. And so in classical setting, what they do, so they take Tanner graphs, which are not trees, of course, and generally what Gallagher did actually many, many years ago, actually more than 50 years ago, in the classical setting, he chose actually this Tanner graph at random. And since there was no constraint as we had in the quantum setting, then actually this thing actually really worked extremely well. It worked really extremely well, and you get codes with large minimum distance, linear minimum distance in the length, the iterative decoding behaved really well, actually. And so there was a very, very good answer to this. Unfortunately, quantum setting, well, there are many problems. Just because actually, there's something actually which was, for instance, up, you can really see it in the talk of Sergei, but you see actually in the quantum setting, you have this additional constraint, for instance, commutation constraints. You can put some randomness on it, but here analyzing things becomes much more complicated because you have basically semi-random construction makes really things much, much more complicated to analyze. And so obtaining codes with large beam distance, okay, doesn't seem such an easy problem, but because if you look at the number of families which have actually a growing mean distance and the weight is not equal to zero, because not doesn't go to zero, then that's not that many actually. And moreover, and this you can see it in this picture, you have short cycles. And there's no way actually you are going to avoid them. Just because if a qubit is involved in one generator with an X and one generator with a Z, since these two generators have to commute, they will definitely have another qubit actually, which is here actually to satisfy the commutation. So you have these four cycles and they are unavoidable, okay? So this doesn't look bad, but what David explained to us on Monday, this is not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that iterative decoding, the belief propagation, actually it should not work at all. It definitely doesn't work, and there is a big, big problem. If you try it, for instance, on the Turing code, then actually you are going to see something very bad. Actually, and even, you know, when you do this on a classical code, what happens when the length of the code gets bigger, then actually the probability of error decreases with the length. So this is something which you really expect. Actually, for a Turing code, if you use belief propagation, it's exactly the other way around. Because the probability of error in a Turing code, if you perform belief propagation decoder, is of order, should I put it this way, of order n times p squared, where p is actually the probability of depolarizing here. And it's of order this, and it increases the length of a code, it doesn't decrease. And you may say, okay, where does it come from? Well, there's a good explanation for this. And actually, David gathered to that. So what's going on here is the fact that this, if you have a quantum LDPC code, the code may have a very good mean distance. This may happen, very good, okay, meaning right now it's not so good, but okay, rather good, put it this way. But the stabilizer generators have low weight, and so you say, I don't care, because, okay, they have low weight, meaning actually that may happen during my decoding process. Maybe I don't get the error, but maybe I get the error modulo a stabilizer, for instance. Well, I don't care about this, because this is as good actually as the original error, since the code is invariant by this. However, this thing is very, very bad, actually, for the belief propagation decoder. And why is it bad? It doesn't depend on the way the things are actually computed. It's really the problem of the quantity you want to compute. Really, it's really a problem with computing this quantity because, and using this quantity later on. Let's take exactly the same example because I actually really like it. It's a very simple example. And you're going to see later on why actually things get better for spatially coupled codes. So the example that David showed us was the following thing. So this is the Turing code. So it means here the picture of a Turing code where actually this guy here are qubits, these are generators here. So these are generators with 4x here, this is a generator with 4z here. And assume that here and here I put an error which was a z. In this case, actually, this generator is going to see the error, this generator is going to see the error, it's going to tell something, okay? So why not? What is the problem? So I say, well, the problem is that there is another error which has exactly the same syndrome. Is instead of having two Z errors here, I have the other way around. And so you say, well, what's not a problem? Maybe I don't find the right error, but if I choose this one differs by the last one by this stabilizer which is here. So this is not a problem. Actually, for the decoder, it is, because if you calculate now the probabilities that the error was equal to y, x, or z, in each of these four positions, which are here, then actually you get one half. Just because if you look at what's the dominant term here, well, the probability is equal to y corresponds to an error which is equal to y in the first position. And for this, you have to take just the first guy here, y is easy, and you divide by the probability of the two first guys. Okay, there may be other guys, but really, actually, the dominant term probably is going here, actually, at these two terms. And this will be about one half. And you do the same computation for the other one, and you get exactly the same thing. And so what's going on here is the following thing, is that for all these four qubits here, the probability that it's either a y or a z is one half, and you are not able to choose, okay? So you may say, okay, maybe I can look here at the possibilities which are going to satisfy my syndrome. Maybe you can do this, but imagine that you have, you know, many positions like this. It's exponential at the end. So this doesn't look good, actually, for this kind of decoding algorithm. And so you may say, okay, maybe there's nothing to do here, or maybe I should come back here. And actually, what the people did up to now was do the following thing. Well, belief propagation doesn't work that well on stabilizers corresponding to the toric code. But if you increase actually the size of a stabilizer, then you may, okay, get around this. And what's going on if you have a weight of a stabilizer which is D, actually, you get probability of error, which are actually bigger than something like this. And this just comes from the fact that the guy that you really want to avoid here, really actually half of a stabilizer, okay? So you really avoid guys like this. And okay, so you might do this, but actually the performance that you get, well, they're not very good, actually. You know, whenever a guy working classical coding theory see actually the curve that they get, okay, they say, okay, well, they're doing crazy things. They're not able to do anything correct here. And well, it's not definitely not a good way of doing things. Well, now what I'm going to show that there might be a way actually to get around this thing here and still get good performances still with this bad decoding algorithm in the quantum case. And by changing slightly the structure of the code. And so what I'm going to show here is a family of codes which are not LDPC codes, again, okay, but we are close to LDPC codes. We are going to see how in a few minutes, but with performances and the iterative decoding, which are going to get really close, actually, to the hashing bound, and by using a known construction of LDPC code and changing it just a little bit. And there's other people who tried this approach of spatially coupled LDPC code, but it did not work. And because the thing that they did, there was something which they missed. They didn't control the error on the outer levels of the construction. I'm going to explain this in a few minutes. So now what I'm going to explain is something which appeared in the classical coding literature in 1999. So it was an idea of Feldstrom and Ziegenkirov. Well, people did not realize at the beginning what this was a very nice idea, actually. You know, this was a time where actually, you know, there are many groups which came with good code construction. Okay, I have a good code construction, me too, blah, blah, blah. And they did not see that something really important actually was obtained at that time. It was only realized actually much, much later. And what they did, first of all, they did something which seemed to be silly. Actually, they did several things which seemed to be silly. Actually, it was very smart. So what they did, they took an LDPC code and they wanted actually to improve it. So let's say I start with a 3-6 regular LDPC code, meaning actually that any bit is involved in 3 checks, and any check actually sees actually 6 bits. And well, they made many copies of it. Why not? If you do this, and if you decode them, that is definitely not a good idea, because here the probability of error, all these codes, they do not talk to each other. And whenever, you know, the probability of error is basically n times the number of blocks that you have here, exponential minus alpha something, which is the length here of these blocks. And basically, it would be much better to take an LDPC code with the whole length and not doing, you know, small blocks like this. But now, I added something, okay, which was still not that good. What they do actually, they took, you know, edges here on this construction, and they swapped it. And they swapped it to neighboring, actually, vertices. So the whole thing, you don't see it here, but it's still a, well, the same kind of regularity that you had before. You say you have the same number of edges, but now actually you mix actually levels here, neighboring levels, so that they talk to each other. And you may decode this thing. Well, if you decode this thing, this actually still performs a little bit, okay, better than the blocks which are actually independent, but still actually it performs better code will be actually still actually to take a big code and just throwing edges at random and taking a 3-6 regular code at the beginning. Would be better than this. But now they added still something which seems stupid. So what they did, they lost some rate here, meaning actually they don't put information here, and they just say that the bit at the beginning here at the end are equal to 0. And they decoded this and they said, which went unnoticed at that time, well, we had a very, very good performances with this. Well, people just did not care. So this does look just like a usual LDPC code. Well, it has some kind of funny structure, line structure, but does nothing, okay? Well, is this something which is really different from an old LDPC construction? Well, you don't believe in this. So, and if you decode them, actually, if you don't do it in the right way, decoding may take a long time. What happens, actually, they saw that decoding this thing, if you decode, you know, take a large number of iterations. Generally, you use, actually, let's say 20, 30, maybe 50 iterations to decode such an LDPC code. And here, actually, they took thousands of iterations. And, well, actually, you can take much less time to decode this, because if you may actually run this belief propagation decoder just, for instance, by taking the 3 first level, doing 50 iterations of this, and then move on, actually, this window from left to right. I'm going to explain what's going on by doing this. Basically, what's going on by doing this is this picture. Because, actually, what's going on here, actually, the threshold that you get to a 3-6 regular code is able to correct something. But what I noticed, that the threshold here for correcting was much, much better. Not just a little bit better, much better. And there is a good reason for this. The reason for this is the following thing. Now, if you look at this picture, what's going on, really? So there is no information here. So this means actually that the guys which are here, which are in the, let's say, this parity check, which sees some bit here and here, actually this parity check, which was, let's say, a weight 6 at the beginning, if there are 2 guys for this parity check which are on this side, this parity check becomes a weight 4 and becomes much better and gives much better information. And just by doing this, actually that helps actually at decoding these guys, because actually the code, the local code that you see here is much better. It's not a 3-6 regular code anymore. It's a, let's say, a 3-something code, with a 6 is less than, it's not 6, it's less than 6. And so much, much better. And well, as soon as these guys get decoded, when you get exactly the same thing as here, because if this is decoded, you may assume that you know now the bits. And now you can do the same thing here. And then basically you get a wave here of decoding, blah, 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 which comes from, starts here, does this, and decodes actually everything as it was a code which was much better. And if you look at what's going on, so a 3-6 regular code, and I'm just looking on the Razor channel. So, and the Razor channel, a 3-6 regular code is a code of rate 1/2. So, in the classical case, with a code of rate 1/2, you would expect to correct about 50% of erasure at most. Okay, this is the limit. This is the Shannon limit. Well, the belief propagation decoder is able to correct 43%. Well, this decoder here is able actually to correct 48%. And so there is, you know, you get really close actually to the limit, which is this. And now if you take a 4.8, which is actually worse for belief propagation decoder, well, actually in belief propagation for this, okay, spatially coupled construction is amazingly close to 0.5. And if you take a 5.10, still of weight 1/2, well, you are almost up to capacity. It's amazingly close. You know, it's just one, okay. And what happens, they notice that because they're able to compute this, they notice that these two things, they were exactly the same. What is this actually? This is actually the limit, okay, of eraser that you can tolerate, not with a belief propagation decoder, but with the best decoder, okay? And so this is the limit, and it, these two things are the same. And then they came up with a proof on the Razor channel. And then I realized maybe there is something. So this was a paper, which is not 2012, but 2010, Kudeka, Richardson, and Rubanke. And I thought maybe this is, we get the same kind of phenomenon for any channel. And basically, any channel is maybe too much to ask for, but they proved actually that the threshold of a maximum likelihood decoding of an LDPC code is the same as the threshold under belief propagation for the spatially coupled version of it, okay? And well, right now, there is some, you know, this is a result which is interesting in itself. But actually, another good thing about this kind of result is the following thing. You know, getting the maximum likelihood decoding a threshold is generally a very hard task, really a very hard task. However, understanding the belief propagation decoder, what is the threshold, that's a much easier task. And this is something actually that you can approach with a finite precision, okay? So this is something that you can do. And this is a way actually of understanding, for instance, the capacity of a maximum likelihood decoding of usual LDPC code by using actually a related family of codes where we have decoder which are able to analyze. And so now, right now, what we are doing in a classical setting, they try actually to mimic this thing. Because, you know, there are many things actually where you don't know the threshold. But if you're able actually to calculate a threshold over something that you're able to calculate to compute a related family, then actually then things are good for you. It's exactly what is going on right now actually in the classical setting. It's definitely, you know, a big progress here, definitely. And so what they also do actually, this partially coupled LDPC codes, well, what they give, just because of this, they gave a universal family of codes that attained the capacity of any binary input memory stimulatory channel. Universal meaning actually that the same family of code is, attains the capacity of many channels at the same time. And this was kind of strange because when people try actually to optimize LDPC code, when they optimize it, actually they saw that the optimum for a razor channel is not the same family of LDPC code that you will take, for instance, if you have a binary symmetric channel. It's not the same, the same degree, you don't get the same, the optimization didn't get the same result. So they were really actually, so this was really raised a lot of questions here. And here you have a family which attains the capacity of any binary input memory sensing, which is kind of good. And now, before I give you the construction in the quantum case, I'm just giving here just a piece of notation. So the family, of course, which I'm going to consider is a family of CSS codes. And so they are formed, as you know, by generators which are which have only tensor product of I and X, or tensor product of I and Z. And now what I call HX and HZ actually are just the binary matrices which give actually this the X generators, this gives the Z generators, and of course these two binary matrices have to be orthogonal to each other to define a quantum code. So now I'm going to say something very nice. So all what we did actually is just to take a construction for which it was obvious that it would give, it's possible to derive out of it a family of quantum, spatially coupled LDPC codes. So took a family actually which has much freedom in it and for which actually you have in a very natural way actually the spatially coupling. So what did they do actually, Lugas and Frias? Then they just took actually a matrix which is like this. So they took H tilde because it's not the final, HX here, which is some sparse matrix here and the identity. And if you do this, actually something which is orthogonal to it is just identity and retranspose. But unfortunately, if you take something like this, this code has actually zero rate. It's pretty easy to see just because of the dimension of the matrices. But you can make it a code of a non-zero rate just by multiplying any matrix will not distract actually the product of these two matrices, which is still going to be zero. And so what you do, you multiply at the left here by a matrix which is not square here, and is going actually to reduce here the sizes. Here actually the sizes are n over 2 here, so there are n over 2 rows here, and I just take something which is sparse here and which reduces a little bit the sizes here. And this still actually get, if this is sparse here, the whole thing stays sparse, and you can check immediately here that the product of these two guys is equal to zero. And now the simple thing about this construction is that you get, you know, this, if I draw the Tanner graph, you get this picture easily. Just because of the following thing, if you look at what's going on here, should look here, I may arrange this thing here such that they have this partially coupled version, okay? So may arrange them around a line here so that the guys which are connected together, they are not far away. And if this is the case for this matrix, just by choosing, you know, P in an appropriate way here and by rearranging here columns, then I get the same thing which happened for this. So it's easy, okay? This is direct, okay?
Are you saying that P must be the parity check matrix of a spatially coupled LDPC?
Yeah, I'm going to take it, I'm not going to take completely at random. I'm going to take it such that I can rearrange things such that it has this partially coupled thing. But I can do this. I have a lot of freedom to do this.
But for this thing to lead to give you a quantum locally coupled,
yeah,
P has to be a
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, that's all what I'm saying, actually. So just saying that I can choose it such that it gives, it has this structure that you saw before, and then for free...
It's the P that you have to choose, and
yeah.
You can choose more or less randomly.
I can choose it more or less randomly, apart from the fact that it has to have this partial structure, okay? But yeah.
And also the minimum distance.
Okay, I didn't say about something, but okay. The minimum distance here is exactly the same. You're going, actually, this construction has a nice thing about this construction, that there's a lot of freedom to choose it. The bad thing about this construction, it has constant minimum distance, okay? And so maybe it's not constant if this is not sparse, for instance, but if this is not sparse, you don't get an LDP C code. So, well, there's a price here. And okay, you can choose it, and maybe you say, okay, why not? Still, I have a code with constant minimum distance, but maybe actually that the performance that will be good. And this is exactly what's going to happen. So the picture, actually, you know, if you draw the tunnel graph here, it looks like this. For the identity part means actually, so this, I did not draw actually, this is just the part which corresponds to the HX part here, a tilde. When identity part means actually that you just go to parity check, and if I take here a P which is a weight D here, it's going to have weight degree D here and degree D here. And when you can understand, and this is actually the tunnel graph for, this is the tunnel graph for the X part, and the tunnel graph for the Z part is just a reverse thing. And so if the tunnel graph for this thing is partially coupled, of course, the other guy is also spatially coupled. And this is kind of trivial. And now you say, okay, how do I control the first level and the last level? Well, what you do is just, you just use concatenation. And just because of this, the code becomes non-LDPC anymore. It's here actually that you are leaving actually the fact that you are LDPC. So you have LDPC code, which has, let's say, some encoding here. So you put information somewhere here by the first code. So this LDPC code, what the specially coupled LDPC code here, what we just saw, so you encode this. And so let's say that this here is the first level, corresponds to the bits of the first level, and this is the last level. And what you do, actually, you encode this guy by another code, which is actually a very good code, which aims actually at protecting this first level and last level. And what we chose, actually, we chose a code which is rather good for doing this. So it's a serial turbo code. I'm probably not going to talk about this. It's not very interesting. That I studied a few years ago with one of my students. And nice thing about this code, it's not an error correcting code, but it does an excellent job at reducing the noise level. It turns a depolarizing noise level of, let's say, 10% into 1/1000, which is not bad.
This is a block error rate.
This is a bit error, because it's a logical error rate per logical qubit, okay? So it really turns, actually, if I decode something like this, so I had, let's say, a depolarizing noise of 10 to negative 1. After decoding, what I get at this level, it's 10 to negative 3.
But why not use a block code then?
Because I don't know how to do this efficiently with iterative decoding with a block code. Because I'm really looking, you know, at noise levels which are much, much above actually what people did before. Okay, I don't know a block code that I can decode it, you know, efficiently, which has a good rate. This code has weight 1/8, and it does this job, you know, at a noise region where actually there are not that many guys that are able to do this. It does an excellent job at doing this. It's a very simple code, actually, but it's not an error correcting code, but it's a very, very good error reducing code.
But just like for, as a matter of principle, you could use like a block code of distance 7 and decoded by brute force, a lookup table.
Yeah, okay. But this, okay, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to simulate the whole thing, and here it's much more efficient. It's much more efficient to do this. And so this is just one of the way to doing this. And the problem is if I do this, of course, well, it's not what I get here is not necessarily an LDPC code anymore. Maybe I'm not completely sure. It could be actually. I have to look at this a little bit closer. But in general, there is no reason actually what it's an LDPC code at the end. Okay, there is no reason. And now, assume, for instance, that you take here, I could also take, for instance, let's say a toy code. Why not? If I'm going to pay a price in terms actually on the rate, but I could use this. If the number of levels which are here is much bigger, actually, than the length that I have here, why not? I could do it. And decoding was performed now on the HX and HZ parts simultaneously. So belief propagation, there's no problem of doing this. While you may say I have problems of cycles, maybe I should mention here that, you know, concerning complexity of decoding, you know, we had several talks actually of the talk this morning was also on this, actually, by Sergey. So if you want to decode, you know, the Y, X, and Y, and Z at the same time, yeah, you have to pay a price for it. And sometimes it's much easier to decode them separately, just because you have matching algorithm, you have the decoding algorithm that Sergey has shown to us, that there are many things like this. Sometimes it's much easier to do things separately. But if you do this, you lose a lot, actually. You lose a lot. Well, that's not completely true. It's just one simple remark that I wish to make here is there is one case, if you are able to choose, actually, the rate of the code, if you want to pay a price and say, I want to take, I can afford to take asymmetric codes here, then actually you don't lose anything in terms of a threshold. I mean the following thing. I mean, you know, I can take a stabilizer code, okay? I take a random stabilizer code of some rate. Now I can take a CSS code, why not? And what I say here, this stabilizer code is going to attain typically the hashing bound. And now what I do, I choose the CSS code, but in the right way. I choose the right amount of Z generators, and I choose the right amount of X generators. And if I do this in the right way, if I decode them separately in the following way, I just decode the X part, and I suppose I chose it in the right way, of course. And there's a way to choose this proportion such that if I give, this is some work with Nicola Delfos. If you decode this thing, and now if you give and you tell the other decoder just one thing, was there at this position a y or x? And if there was an x, you just erase actually the position. Then actually you still get the hashing bound. By this, the second decoder just has actually to decode things with errors here and erasures. So there is something you can decode them almost, you know, at the same at a cost which is actually much smaller, probably here, by decoding two things more or less separately, just by filling in some moderate kind of information. But for this strategy to work, you have to choose actually the proportion of X and Z generators in the right way. Okay. So let's come back now to our construction. Oof, I see that the time is running. And now let's have a look what it does. Well, let's have a look. So here we are looking at codes of weight 1/4. Why did we take 1/4? Just because there are many, actually, we had many curves, of course, for weight 1/4. This was the only reason why we took this weight, okay? Just to compare with many other constructions. So what you see here, so this is the probability on the depolarizing channel. And the hashing bound here corresponding to codes, quantum codes of weight 1/4 is 1.126. So it's about here, okay? This is the bound if you do these things, if you decode the two things separately, but not as I explained before. So it's below 11%, below here in this case. So here we saw the, you see the first code we were devised in 94 here by Mike K, which, okay, first family of quantum codes of the rate 1/4, so decoded by iterative decoding by this belief propagation decoder, however, up to here. When you see actually families of codes, actually, these are turbo codes, actually with David Poulin, this is joint work with David Poulin, which are about here, that came a family in 2006 and then 2006, which were here. This one are one of the family of codes, which was divided by my PhD student and Harold Olivier and me. So we were here, and now we are here. And the hashing bound is here. So that is definitely, definitely a big progress, just by doing this silly thing. This very, very silly thing. Very naive thing, very silly. Just by doing this. And you may wonder now, why do we require really better? So is it because I should attain the hashing bound? Well, there is something which happens in the quantum setting, but that's not going to happen in the classical setting. There's a new thing here. And now let's come to the toric code example of David again. So assume here that I take now a family of spatially coupled codes, but now I take coupling of toric codes. So it means actually I have, you know, I have many levels here of toric codes. And now I mix actually some of the generators, you know, there are some guys which are in some level here. For instance, this qubit here is at level 0, whereas these guys are at level 1. And now at level 0, well, assume that you have something else which is able actually to control the error on this level. Exactly what the additional thing that you had here. So assume that you had this. So assume this, assume for instance that you had no error at this level. So in this case, what's going on? Now let's have a look at, for example, what we saw before. Now if you want to decode this, what's going on? Now you know this guy. And now actually you had, before you had two errors which gave the same syndrome here. But now, because you know this and you know there is no error here, of these two guys, there's only one which is remaining. And now, things change completely. Because I had a probability of 1/2 before. But now, since I know of these two guys is one, only one possibility, I get almost one here. And so this is really what's going on here. And so basically, you see, in some sense, you see exactly this phenomenon here. And what's going on here, you have exactly something like this. So there are some parity check that might be actually half of a parity check which might be in error, but this is going to tell you which error is going to choose. This is going to actually to help the decoder. I'm going to decode this thing, and once this is decoded, actually the same phenomenon goes on here, and so on and so forth. And this is the main actually explanation why actually it performs so well actually. So these are not many theoretical results. And what I'm trying to finish here with some kind of speculative thoughts, because there's one thing, the first thing that we tried was not this one. Because you know, you don't want to try a family of codes which has constant minimum distance. This is something you know you really want to avoid doing, okay? So you don't like this probably. And the first thing that we tried was something else. But I still think that the something else might be interesting. So I'm going to tell about this thing. So I'm coming back actually to the hypergraph product code construction of Gilles and me. And maybe we should not have called it hypergraph. Actually, it's really a graph product construction in some sense. Call it this way. Tell you why. assume that you take two classical codes here. So take two classical codes and look at the Tanner graph which is associated to them. So this represents the parity check matrix. So this represents the checks, this represents the bits. You take these two codes, these two graphs, which are associated to two codes here, C like checks, V like variables, and you take the Cartesian product of these two graphs. The Cartesian product of two bipartite graphs is also actually bipartite. And bipartition looks like this. So the set of vertices is just actually the Cartesian product of the two set of vertices. And that means actually that there is a partition in four sets here of a set of vertices. So V1 times V2, C1 times C2, V1 times C, V1 times C2, and C1 times V2. And if you look at what's going on, actually, there are only edges between guys on this side and edges of this this thing. And actually, you have an edge here between V1 and V2, whenever actually the second coordinate is exactly the same, and the C2, which is here, is actually a vertex which is adjacent to V2 in this graph. Or the other way around here, if the V1 is adjacent to C1, but the second coordinate is the same. And if you look at this construction, you get actually this kind of picture. You get this thing whenever there is a guy which is connected to this and this, then there's another guy which is connected to these two guys. And this is actually very good for you because it means that this defines a quantum code. Because I can now put an X here and a Z here, and Z on this side, and just because of this property here, just coming from the Cartesian product of a graph, simple property of a Cartesian product, it means actually if I have a generator here, which meets a generator here, then they will commute just because of the other guy which is here. And now it turns out that the minimum distance, the quantum minimum distance of this harmony is good. It's basically bigger than the minimum of the two minimum distance plus some, okay, under some additional constraint which are generally satisfied. And, well, maybe if I don't sure I have time, I will not talk about why this thing is going on, even maybe related to what I want to say. And now, okay, what do you have to do if you want to build a spatially coupled version of this family of codes? When you take some copies of it and you try to mix edges. Well, you might try to mix them at random, but if you mix them at random, you have to be careful because, you know, you have to, whenever you have two guys which meet together here with a blue and a red edge, meaning actually there are two generators with an X and a Z meeting here, it means actually there should be another guy which is here actually to satisfy the alternate constraint. And so you have to be careful about how you mix edges. You cannot do it completely at random. And there is a very simple way actually, because we really control in this construction, one of the good things of this construction, you really control actually the alternate constraints, actually what makes them work. And so you have actually to change, okay, the edges such as you get actually this picture that you had before. So whenever you have a qubit which meets two generators, one with a X, one with a Z, there is another guy which is here. And one way of doing this is adding a time here, which is actually the level at which this qubit sits. And what you do, well, when you go to an edge like this, you just add some function, some bounded function, which only depends on the vertex that you are taking in the graph. So the V1, C1 vertex, V2 is constant here. If you do this, well, you go from here to here. From here, you go to T plus F2, V2, C2, because you took this edge in the second graph. And because of this, because you use this rule, there's a minus here, minus here, because if you take an edge from V to C, there's a plus, and the other way around, there's a minus, you get something like this. And you see actually that you have this picture, which is exactly the picture you want to have to satisfy the autonomy constraint. So there's a very simple way of doing things. So my suspicion is that this simple thing of doing things will actually give a code with good minimum distance, with growing minimum distance, if you choose things in a good way here. And, but what, okay, first of all, I wanted to prove something about this, but then I just used actually, I just decoded them, and the performances were not good at all. And there is actually a good, very good reason for this. The reason for this comes from the fact that the minimum distance, well, is not so good, but I mean the quantum minimum distance, but there is a big problem. And you can see it, maybe maybe I should put it here. If I have 2 minutes, I'll be able to explain it. So when you have something like this, let's try to find what could be a minimal code word. So if a CSS code, a minimal code word, is either on, has only either only X's or only Z. So let's put only Z. And put only Z just on this part. And if you look at this, there's only one kind of generators which are going to see this. These are these guys which are here. But the guys which are here, look, they correspond to which kind of vertices? So it corresponds to a V1. V2, and it goes here, which is actually V1, C2. And if you look at the graph that you have here, this is that you have many copies of the same graph. Okay, for any V1, actually you get the same graph, which was the original graph. And here for this graph, what's going on? Well, actually you see the original code. And so, if you have too much errors on some of this graph here, then the decoder will not be able to do the job. Just because even if you know the error here, it's going to get fooled by this thing. Because the only thing, the guys which see this are basically a classical code. And so basically, the property of error is dominated by the fact that this level, this small level, gets wrong. There are too many errors from it. So you may say, okay, but this happens with exponential small probability. The problem is that the exponential small probability is something which is square root of the whole length of the code. And if you count the number of levels that you have like this, you add something like this. So here actually there's something also here, but you get something like this. And just because of this factor, actually, it's a nightmare. You don't see it for small length, actually, even for large length, you will see a very bad code, but just because of this phenomenon. Okay, for extreme long length, it would be a good code, probably, but not for small length. And this, if you want to take a spatially coupled thing, it's even worse, because you have to take, you know, small portion of this, because you want the length of the code not to be 1 billion, you want it to be, let's say, several thousand, several hundred thousand. And just because of this, you have many levels, and each level, the square root is a code like this. So you don't want this to happen. And so this explains actually why it doesn't work. But however, what it could do, something like this, it could be definitely of interest. Because if I take this construction with this kind of code, this kind of code is definitely a very good suspect of having a good minimum distance. First thing. Second thing is an excellent suspect of actually studying iterative decoding on it and showing that it's good. Third thing, if you can handle, you know, this additional concatenation level that you need to protect the first and last level, then if you can do this in the fault tolerance setting, then you might get something. But it's not an LDPC code right now, okay? And there's no way to put it LDPC in a it definitely needs to be non-LDPC, just because the concatenation level, it needs actually to give information with probably going to zero, with Taylor probability going to zero as the length goes to infinity. So it needs actually a high minimum distance. There's no way to get around it. And because high minimum distance, it's not LDPC. I could make it LDPC, but it's cheating and I cannot analyze the decoding algorithm. So the only way there is a chance to analyze the decoding algorithm is if it's not LDPC. But still, there may be something to do here, because definitely there's an excellent candidate to analyze the decoding algorithm. Okay, so finish with this. So there are many more questions actually that there are answers. Sorry about this. It's a very naive actually result. So you might actually think that there might be further improvement in the construction, but it's very likely because, you know, this is just the second not so worst thing that we tried, put it this way, at the beginning. I mean, for sure there's much room for improvement and getting close, really close actually to the hashing bound, I really believe in. This is no problem with getting this, no problem. With this kind of construction, maybe you have to change a little bit things, but not so much. And what I said here, so this, there are some of these families for which there is much easier to analyze iterative decoding, and for which there is definitely some hope of analyzing it and showing, for instance, that it has some threshold. Definitely. So, okay, finish with this. Yeah.
I'm curious, what happens to your curve if you manually set the error rate of the first layer to zero? In other words, is this kind of... No, but I mean, like, mm-hmm. The fact that you don't get quite the hashing done, is it just due to...
No, I don't think so. If you tried it, and we changed this and took what's going on, if it's zero or not, and, well, it changed a little bit, but it's very much, you know, going from 0 to 10 to negative 3, there's almost no gain. There's some tiny gain.
You don't need something extremely good on the boundary.
Of course, but to analyze it, sure, you need something extremely good. For good performance, no, you don't need something so good. Exactly. So maybe you can even go beyond, you know, above this 10 to negative 3. Maybe there's another kill to take this family of turbo codes, which are this very good error reducing code. So, yeah.
But in particular, I think if you use some kind of block code, it would be much more LDPC like.
I know, but the reason why I want to take it LDPC is I want to analyze it. If I really want to analyze it, I cannot take it to be LDPC. That's the problem. That's the real problem. Okay. I understand that for practical reasons, I can take it to be LDPC. This, okay, this no problem. But on the other hand, I want to analyze the decoding. And in this case, if I want to analyze decoding, no way I can use it if it's LDPC. I don't see a way to do the analysis or how it helps. But it helps if I say that the first level is free of error. Here, it definitely helps. I get something for free here, which is definitely very helpful to analyze the decoding. But I never had before, actually. You know, the big problem that I had at the beginning with half of a generator, they're a nightmare for me. No, I don't have it. I don't have it. And that's a good thing. So in some sense, this is a way, actually, of turning this quantum LDPC code in family of codes which behave like classical LDPC codes. OK, it's a way of cheating. Well, I don't know if it's cheating or not, but OK, it's a way of doing this.
Do you have to deconstruct an actual LDPC code to get this construction? Because I'm thinking about this construction that Alexei showed on Monday.
Yeah.
Where you
sort of I understand. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Connection between the layers and see what it does.
You could do this.
You have this property that stabilizer generators commute only with the help of the extra layers.
You could. I didn't try because I really wanted to have it first thing that I tried, I wanted to have something which worked. Yeah, but there are many ways of doing things. Of course, there are a huge number of things to do. Actually, they did not do it this way. There was this Japanese guy here, we did this, okay, just before us. But actually, the performance that they got, okay, they were somewhere here. So you could think, you know, codes like this have no use. So what they took, actually, they took quasi-cyclic LDP, quantum LDPC codes, basically. And but there is a very, you know, you can arrange them into such levels which are not, you know, connected together, which are not far away. You have this structure. But what they did not protect the first and last level. And the whole thing here is protecting the first and last level, or at least the first level is important. Last level, okay, do the same thing, but the first level is important, at least one level at the beginning of the top. Yeah.
So yeah. For the degeneracy issue, it seems important that every check is locally coupled.
Yeah.
So I mean, classically, did people do this, or they just locally couple like a few or?
They do what they want, actually, because it works. they don't have this problem, you know?
Yeah.
We have this problem of degeneracy, what we want to kill. We want to do everything to get rid of this thing. And so this is a way of doing things, but they didn't do it because they didn't have to. We do
but
have
to. My question was more like this obligation to locally couple every check, that is it a problem or?
Well, you cannot, by the way, you cannot completely couple and you say every check because...
Well, like if there's a check which remains purely like in one block, you will still have the degeneracy problem.
Right, and this is, more or less, but yes or no, because what could happen, you know, this is just in one block, which is not a good one, but it could be when this thing, you know, is associated to something like this, and then you just have to get one guy right, okay? Whenever you get one of the guys right, out of a thing,
This
is a generator, okay? This lives completely here, but now this is involved in a generator which is here. And at some point, just because of this, I will be sure about this guy. And when I'm sure about this guy, it's the only thing what I need. Okay? So it's more complicated than this. Maybe last thing that I did not say during the talk, and I should. So you should wonder, what's so magical about the line here? This I did not explain, but it's important. You could say, well, such a thing. I take any LDPC code and just what I'm doing at some random point, I'm just saying I know the error. Why not? But if you do this, it doesn't work at all. And the reason is because what's going on, a typical graph of this will be an expander. And so actually, the effect of a guy what you know actually gets diluted pretty quickly because, you know, the exponential number of guys which are some distance. But this actually things, arranging things along a line means actually, you know, that these guys, they have a direct effect on these guys. And, okay, direct effect at distance one. Many guys at distance one which have an effect. And if it's arranged, you know, anywhere, the number of guys which have this effect is the number is much bigger, and number distance two is much much bigger. So it doesn't work. It doesn't work because of this. So it's a huge difference. So it's definitely very very important to arrange this against such a thing because it doesn't have to expand well here at this level. Because they have to give a lot, these guys have to leak a lot of information to just a few guys.